Our reading this morning is an excerpt from the essay, Why Trying New Things is So Hard to Do. It was written by economist and Harvard professor Sindhil Mulainathan and appeared in the New York Times. I drink a lot of Diet Coke, 2 liters a day, almost 6 cans worth. I'm not proud of the habit, but I really like the taste of Diet Coke. As a frugal economist, I'm well aware that switching to a generic brand would save me money, not just once, but daily, for weeks and years to come. Yet I only drink Diet Coke. I've never even sampled generic soda. Why not? I've certainly thought about it, and I tell myself that the dollars involved are inconsequential, really, that I'm happy with what I'm already drinking, and that I can afford to be passive about this little extravagance. Yet I'm clearly making an error, one that reveals a deeper decision-making bias whose cumulative cost is sizable. Like most people, I conduct relatively few experiments in my personal life, in both small and big things. This is a pity, because experimentation can produce outsized rewards. For example, I wouldn't be risking much to try a generic soda, and if I liked it enough to switch, the payout could be big. All my future sodas would be cheaper. When the same choice is made over and over again, the downside of trying something different is limited and fixed. That one soda is unappealing, while the potential gains are disproportionately large. One study estimated that 47% of human behaviors are of this habitual variety. Yet many people persist in buying branded products even when equivalent generics are available. Our common failure to experiment extends well past generics, as one recent study illustrates. On February 5th, 2014, London underground workers went on a 48-hour strike, forcing the closing of several tube stops. The affected commuters had to find alternate routes. When the strike ended, most people reverted to their old patterns, but roughly 20 stuck with the new route, shaving 6.7 minutes from what had been an average 32-minute commute. The closing imposed by the strike forced experimentation with alternate routes, yielding valuable results. And if the strike had been longer, even more improvements would probably have been discovered. Yet the fact that many people needed a strike to force them to experiment reveals the deep roots of a common reluctance to experiment. Habits are powerful. We persist with many of them because we tend to give undue emphasis to the present. Trying something new can be painful. I might not like what I get, and I must forego something I already enjoy. That cost is immediate, while any benefits, even if they are large, will be enjoyed in a future that feels abstract and distant. Overconfidence also holds us back. I am unduly certain in my guesses of what the alternatives will be like, even though I haven't tried them. Finally, so many so-called choices are not really choices at all. Walking down the supermarket aisle, I do not make a considered decision about soda. I don't even pause at the generics. I act without thinking. I automatically grab the bottles of Diet Coke as I wheel my cart by. Experimentation is an act of humility, an acknowledgement that there is simply no way of knowing without trying something different. Understanding that truth is a first step, but it is important to act on it. Sticking with an old habit is comforting, but one of these days, maybe I'll actually buy a bottle of generic soda. Here ends the reading.
Good morning. Excuse me if I'm a baby about this. These were my words to the phlebotomist a few weeks ago as she tied a tourniquet around my upper arm and proceeded to draw a vial of blood. Excuse me if I'm a baby about this. She smiled and promised that it wouldn't hurt. They always seem to say that, don't they? And then I did what I always do during these procedures. I shut my eyes and I tried to think about something else. I've never been a very brave or a very successful blood giver, though I've certainly given it my best shot over the years. The first time I ever gave blood was in college. The American Red Cross was conducting a blood drive on our campus. Wanting to do my part, I signed up thinking I could get over my needle anxiety and do a good deed. On the day of the blood drive, I screwed up my courage and I submitted to the necessary procedure to give my pint, only to pass out cold when it was all done. Well, the volunteer staff did what I gather they usually do with the other blood donor lightweights. They strapped me into an upside-down chair to help the blood rush back into my head, and they started shoving Fig Newtons in my direction. Well, I didn't let that fainting experience hold me back, though, from signing up again for the next blood drive or the next. However, after my third donation and subsequently my third fainting spell, the young Red Cross volunteer whom I'd encountered before handed me a Fig Newton, cocked his head, and looked at my upside-down face in that upside-down chair and said, maybe you're not cut out to be a blood donor. Have you thought about doing something else? Well, no, I clearly hadn't, but perhaps I should have. And so that day was the end of my charitable blood donations. Today, my bloodletting is strictly for me and only in conjunction with my medical exams. While I'm no longer a blood donor, that young man's question, "Have you thought about doing something else?" has stuck with me all these years. He rightly sensed that it was important for me to make a contribution of some kind to help my fellows, but perhaps I had been going about it the wrong way. Perhaps I just hadn't found my right something yet. That question, "Have you thought about doing something else?" has come up for me several times over the years. And this past Friday, I had a chance to reflect on it again. Friday is the day that I attend my weekly 12-step meeting, which is held at noon in the basement of an Episcopal church in my Atlanta neighborhood. The people who regularly attend this meeting are a diverse lot. In addition to a few clergy persons like myself, there are doctors and lawyers, students and retirees, actors and actresses, real estate agents and musicians. There are wealthy people and poor people at that 12-step meeting. There are people who are out of work and people who are homeless. We are black and white, Latino, Asian, straight, gay, and trans. We're young and old. We're Christian, Jewish, Muslim, atheist, and agnostic. We are, in many ways, at that 12-step meeting, America's melting pot. Our meeting in that church basement is a place where everyone is encouraged to share how we're working our program and where we're all equals in our journeys of recovery. There are many people who volunteer to help keep that Friday noon meeting going. Somebody makes the coffee. A few others set up the chairs and put out the literature. Someone leads the meeting, and someone else offers a discussion topic. Getting a 12-step meeting underway is not at all unlike what we do to make Sunday morning happen. It takes a lot of people, each doing their part, to pull it off. Well, I never thought of that 12-step community as being my answer to that question that Red Cross volunteer offered, which was, "Have you thought about doing something else. But 31 years ago, after failing at many other attempts at recovery, which included reading self-help books, seeing a therapist, seeing a priest, a spiritual guru, and just trying to white-knuckle my way through things, I found the willingness to once again do something else. And that's when I eventually found 12-step meetings, and I'm still attending them today. My participation contributes to both my well-being and the well-being of others. All these Fridays later, I'm grateful that this act of participating and sharing has had the power to heal and change my life and many other lives. In today's reading, our author acknowledges that habits of his, like drinking Diet Coke, are powerful, and therefore doing something else can be rather challenging. Trying something new can be painful, he writes. I might not like what I get, and I might forgo something that I already enjoy. The cost is immediate, while any benefits, even if they are large, will be enjoyed in a future that feels abstract and distant. Well, we all know about this, right? Somewhere in my own human psyche is programmed the idea that what is familiar is good, even when it's really not. I have stubbornly hung on to a self-defeating habit or thought because it was just too darn scary to try out a new behavior or adopt a new way of thinking. This attitude kept me stuck not only in my addiction for many years, it also kept me mired in personal and professional relationships that weren't working and in patterns of living that weren't life-affirming. When I find myself, when perhaps we find ourselves, trapped by our own desire for the comfortable and the familiar, our author suggests that we can break free not by exercising more willpower or firmer resolve, not by applying rational thinking, and not by imagining dire consequences if we don't change. Rather, he says the way to liberate ourselves from ourselves is to try a little experimentation. In other words, we need to do something other than what we've always done. Experimentation, he writes, is an act of humility. It's an acknowledgement that there is simply no way of knowing without trying something different. Well, I take his words to mean that my current knowledge and past experiences, as valuable as they may be, will only take me so far in life. Experimentation, on the other hand, invites me to acknowledge their limitations and then to do something else. Our author also says that humility is what makes experimentation possible. Well, humility, that's one of those spiritual principles that I have previously and wrongly associated with defeat. I believe now that humility is at work when I finally arrive at the place where I both acknowledge my shortcomings and I recognize that life is asking me to respond differently now. When I act on my willingness to experiment with new behavior, to do something else, I believe that I open the door to greater personal, emotional, and spiritual growth. The good news about doing something else is that the something else doesn't have to be grandiose. It can start off being pretty small, actually. I can try a new soda. I can take a new route to school or work. I can sign up for just one day of service at a local volunteer organization. I can show up for just one protest rally. My new behavior may leave me feeling excited or uncomfortable, and then I can decide whether or not I want to keep it going. Religious teachers through the ages have demonstrated that letting go of the old and familiar and doing something else often begins with doing something small. Jesus, for example, taught that the journey toward a new and powerful faith could start out in tiny ways, as tiny as a mustard seed. Gandhi demonstrated that individual nonviolent acts of protest could add up, so much so that they could eventually overturn an oppressive and powerful colonial regime. Reverend William Barber, founder of the Moral Monday movement, showed that the presence of a handful of peaceful protesters on the steps of the North Carolina State Capitol week after week after week could eventually grow in number and influence. Over and over again, we are told and we see that our willingness to do something else, to do something different, can, over time, transform our lives and the lives of others. So, if that's true, then why is it that I sometimes feel, that sometimes perhaps we all feel, so overwhelmed at the prospect of getting out of our comfort zone even just a little bit? Could it be that we need constant reminders and constant encouragement that our actions, however small, do indeed add up and matter? Well, in my Atlanta Friday 12-step meeting, I once heard a man talk about his forgetter. That's what he called it, a forgetter, which he said is an imaginary switch inside his brain that automatically and unexpectedly flipped on when he wasn't doing those something else things that he needed to do to break old habits and take care of his sobriety and his program. This guy said that his forgetter would cause him to lose sight of the fact completely that he was an addict with a serious illness, and that if untreated, could and would lead him back to his old behavior and down the road to hell. The only defense, he said, against his forgetter, he said, was to keep coming back to meetings, to keep talking with other persons in recovery, and keep giving back to others in the program. By staying active and involved in 12-step, that imaginary switch in his brain was less likely to flip on and flip him into the danger zone of despair. Well, perhaps it's that way with us, too. We Unitarian Universalists who are beautifully idealistic, we who strive to live into our best selves, we who long to build a world that cherishes the inherent worth and dignity of every person and where each person cares for our planet. Perhaps a version of the forgetter resides in our own brains, or perhaps in our UU souls. Perhaps we become discouraged by personal habits we see as stubborn, or by leaders and policies that we see as adrift, and we forget that change is really possible. Perhaps we forget that our resignation or even seemingly benign complacency can become the ball and chain that keeps our spirits shackled and our dreams of a better life and a better world on the shelf. Well, this morning, I want to remind myself and to say to you, don't. Don't let the forgetter, or more seriously, anything or anyone, flip you into a place of hopelessness and leave us trying to nurture our dreams and our spirits on familiar and tired habits. Don't let the forgetter tell us lies. Lies like the one that says that habits are hard to break. They are, but not impossible. Or the lie that says that discomfort must be avoided at all costs. If I want to grow, there's no way out of it. Or the lie that says that the world and its people will never change. It can and they do, but not without effort. I believe that finding the courage to change means that we are ready to be different. I believe it also means trusting that by keeping an open mind, we can make a difference in the quality of our lives and in the lives of others. And so perhaps one way to keep our forgetters at bay, to keep our hopes up and our willingness alive, is that from time to time, we must look into our worried hearts and our upside-down faces and gently ask, have you considered doing something else? And then, with perhaps a little or a lot of courage, and with the love and encouragement of communities like this one, we can do the something else. That something else that restores sunlight to our spirits, enables us to rise up from our complacency or our discouragement, and enables us to be truly free. May it be so for you and for me. Amen.